Palestine at that time were those who were really, one of the leads is countries from which they came because they were oppressed and there wasn't the freedom that they wanted. And at that time, don't forget that there was the country was absolutely underdeveloped. And we came in to visit this Mrs. Ruderman one night, and she said, you know, I invited a dentist, a woman dentist, to come. I thought, she said to Maury, I thought you'd be interested to meet a dentist in this country. And she was supposed to come, this woman was supposed to come at about 7 o'clock, and she didn't arrive till about 9. And she said, I'm late because after office hours, I went down to help pave the streets and laying bricks, this woman, the dentist. That was the kind of caliber of person just to go to Palestine in those days. They literally tilled the soil. Mm-hmm. They did the hard labor. There was the Hula section on it, was, you know, the swamps, and there were eye diseases there, trachoma, and malaria was prevalent at that time. And these people that worked there under the most hard conditions that anyone could possibly conceive.
Were you and your husband tempted to stay?
No.
Why?
Because I love this country. I guess because this was my first country. However, my husband especially always would say if he ever had to go anywhere else, he'd want to live in Israel. I never had a desire to live there. I guess it was a selfish purpose. That when I saw how terribly hard the people were working.
Was that the only trip you've ever made? Mm-hmm.
Well,
you've been back
to Israel? Yes, we were there 3 years ago, as a matter of fact. But when I say that there was hardly a blade of grass when we were there, you can take my word for it. We were there for a whole month because the interesting part was to meet the people, the kind of people that were there. They were extraordinary people. They came from all parts of the world. And the thing that was so extraordinary was that we met parents of young people who went there just to visit the country, and these young people, just like today, would stay over, and their parents used to come in to visit them because they didn't want to come back to their own particular countries. Now, the conditions with water especially, there was a shortage of water. Do you know that if we wanted to take a bath, we had to ask for the permission to take a bath in Israel, and we had to pay for it every time we had to take a bath. We had to pay extra. That's how the shortage of water.
Where were the bathrooms? Where were they?
They were in the hotel, right in the hotel, but you weren't allowed to use the water for bath until you got permission and actually had to pay extra for it. They used to reuse any water they would get it through whatever means they had to. And then when we came back, we were even more convinced than ever that something had to be done about getting Palestine for the Jewish people, because even in those days there were pogroms in Israel. Just about 2 weeks before we arrived, there were 168 Jews who were killed during the Sabbath service by the Arabs. So that there were very difficult times. And when we came back...
Before you that did, what other countries did you visit?
We visited 18 different countries. We were
all together.
18 different countries. And that's one of the other impacts that I want to tell you about that this trip made. The thing that was so wonderful about the trip was that you didn't go to the tourist places that one takes ordinarily. We really lived among, didn't live among the people. For instance, we went to India and China and Japan. Well, India and Japan, if you've ever been to India, if you want to know what poverty means, one should go to India. Or China, when we went to Canton, where people lived, half of the population lived in sandpans, you know, and never touched soil.
How was your health on all these trips and all this in those days?
Marvelous. We didn't have, except that my vaccination didn't take when we were in India, when we got to India. My vaccination didn't take. My husband did, but mine didn't. And I said to Maury, I said, Maury, if anything happens to me, if I die, be sure you ship me back to the United States. Because, you know, you go in the Ganges River and they dump the bodies into the river. Never in all the world. You cannot. You read about these things. You see movies, but you cannot conceive what takes place in that country. And my daughter Susan and my son Gordon were there last year. They went to India too. And I always talked about India and the dreadful conditions. And I'm sure they thought that we were exaggerating. So when they got back, I was worried when they went there, because when we were in India, in China, in all of these countries, you weren't allowed to drink water. And we didn't. We wore gloves all the time. And I warned them, and I worried terribly about them being there. And I said, don't drink water, and don't eat any uncooked foods, and don't eat vegetables. I stressed and stressed it as strong as I could, and I used to worry terribly. And when they got back, I said to them, well, what did you think of India? They said, Mother, we thought you were exaggerating, but we can only tell you that it's worse now than it was when we were there 42 years ago. Mm-hmm. The reason I mention this to you is that when you travel like that, and you really see the countries, you have an entirely different idea about people than their suffering. I think that that's why, and I'm not saying this just to be boastful, but I don't think there's a hurricane or a flood or a picture of a child that doesn't make me respond. I don't make large contributions. I send in a dollar or two to any of these causes, because when you know about the suffering of these other countries, you feel that you are really... I think it's not a matter of generosity, it's a matter of guilt conscience that I respond to these things. You have no idea what exists throughout the world. And I give very little to a lot of these things, but I think I respond to everything. And the other reason that I always respond to things that concern people is that my mother once taught me a lesson. I shall never forget. I told you that we always had boxes on the wall, and she always contributed in whatever way she could, nickels or pennies, wherever it was. I'll never forget one day, the doorbell rang. This was when we already moved to East End, by the way, which I didn't tell you. And the doorbell rang, and I answered the doorbell. When I came back, my mother said, who was it? This was all in Yiddish, because my mother could hardly speak English. She didn't go to school when we came to this country. I said, oh, it was some drunkard. He wanted a nickel for a cup of coffee. She says, did you give him a nickel? And I said, no. She says, why didn't you give him a nickel? I said, he was drunk. She said, do you know why he was drunk? Maybe he was troubled. She says, never turn anybody away from this door. And to this day, I know many times I give when I give when I shouldn't. A nickel or a dime or a quarter. I don't want to give the impression that I'm that generous. But I just have never turned anybody away from the door. And this, incidentally, I think was the general attitude of the people who came over from foreign countries.
Right. My grandparents, my mother says, grandmother used to be annoyed if they didn't stop. She was hurt if somebody didn't stop at the door.
I remember when the Mishalochim, you know, the missionaries came to our, they were the ones who collected the money from the boxes. Well, my mother would never think of having them come to sit down and have a cup of tea and some kipple. I mean, this was the general rule. Mm-hmm. One took charity for granted. And those were the days when the one immigrant helped another. Those were the days of the baskets. You know, we used to pack baskets. The Bicker Cholim, for instance, any of the Jewish organizations would, during holidays, would pack baskets. And somebody would take it to some family. We didn't even know who the families were. There were no questions asked. We just did those things. Because everybody that came over was very poor. And
we've gotten you around the world, and we've gotten you from Palestine and into 18 countries. So you came back, and when did you start having your children, and where did you live?
Well, when we came back from Palestine, I had been the president.
Was that the last place you were? Was Palestine?
No, the last place we were was in Canada. We came back through Canada. I told you we wanted a circle. We came on the little St. Lawrence River on, and that was our last ship. Came back from Canada.
Around the world.
Canada. Where did you live then? Did you have
we
a place picked out?
My mother's house on Chisholm Street. We came back to our house. My mother.
Would you remember the address then?
It was 1004 Chisholm Street. And
that's the East End.
Mm-hmm. And we lived in my mother's house because my sister Anna was already married and she lived there. When we returned,
oh, she lived there.
When she returned,
who did she marry?
She married Sam Siegel, Samuel Siegel, who was from New York.
S-I-E-G-E-L.
And she and I lived together for several years, as a matter of fact.
And she stayed there.
Mm-hmm. Two families lived there for quite a while. Well, anyhow, when we came back from what was then Palestine, that is from our trip, and we had been in Palestine for a whole month now, and I think of people who go there for 2 weeks, and there's so much to see. And we were there, and you know why we were interested in just to meet marvelous people. One person was more wonderful than the next. It was just absolutely a remarkable experience. And then I was busy making speeches.
When you came home, you mean
of
there?
Of course, everybody wanted, not about, heaven forbid, they didn't want to know about our trip around the world. They wanted to know about Palestine.
Where'd you make your speeches?
Oh, you name it, every place that, I don't know.
Every organization that existed.
Every organization
any Christian organization?
No. No, there wasn't the rapport between Jew and non-Jew in those days that there is now.
Mm-hmm. So when you made these speeches, what else did you do? What were you doing besides making speeches? You'd just come back from your honeymoon.
Then this is what happened. When I came back, this was during the Depression, too. The banks crashed at that time in 1932. As a matter of fact, when we were in India, we couldn't give an American dollar away for nothing because they just wouldn't take it. It was we were able to get exchange some American money, and American Express, one of the men in one of the department stores in India, was influential, and he exchanged the money for us. Otherwise, we couldn't have gotten on the next ship. Mm. At any rate, when we came back, the Hadassah, of course, was in existence at that time. It had been for many, many years. I'm talking about Hadassah. And Sarah Marcus, Mrs. J.H. Marcus, was going out of presidency. She was a marvelous president. And because it was very difficult to get people interested in anything that had to do with Palestine, and because there were no young people in the organization at all at that time, which was true of all Jewish organizations. Council of Jewish Women, for instance, the membership was not a young one. There were the older people. they couldn't get a president to follow Sarah Marcus, so they came to me. Just having been the president of Junior Hadassah, because we had been in Palestine, they thought that they might get me to join. And frankly, I didn't want to because there were a bunch of old ladies, and I didn't.
They first wanted you to join, not to be president, or they wanted you to join and
be president?
They
wanted me to be the president. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even a member. But mm-hmm. because I had been president of Junior Hadassah, and with the experience of having been in Palestine and a true appreciation of it, and there weren't many people from Pittsburgh who were going to Palestine mm-hmm. at that time either, they prevailed on me to take the presidency, and I took it reluctantly.
Now, Junior Hadassah was a separate organization at that time from Hadassah, per se.
Right.
Is that right?
It was
younger
just
group.
Like there was a Council of Jewish Women, there was a Junior Council. It was a younger group. It was from the age of 16 to 25, as a matter of fact.
Mm.
Most of the junior organizations at that time. Well, they prevailed on me to take the presidency, and I might add, I was reluctant in taking it, and the membership was reluctant in having me, because I was a youngster. You see, in those days, they didn't have young people, and they really weren't so sure of what kind of a job I would do, even though I was I had a reputation for having been a good president, but I was too young to take that job, but they had no choice in the matter. So at that time, Mrs. J.H. Marcus, Mrs. Julius Cohen, that you must have known, Mrs. I.H. Levin, who became a national vice president. Mrs. I.H. Levin, Mrs. Julius Cohen.
Have they been presidents?
Oh, yes, both of them were presidents.
L-E-V-I-N?
L-E-V-I-N. Her husband was an internationally famous man. He was a scientist or something.
She became national president, you said?
No, national vice president, Mrs. I.H. Levin. As a matter of fact, these women, Mrs. I.H. Levin, Mrs. Julius H. Cohen, Mrs. A.H. Bixman, who was the first president of Hadassah.
How do you spell Bixman?
V-I-X-M-A-N, who is a nationally known person, by the way. And she is now about 86 or 7 and is an extremely active woman in New York City. She wrote the book on parliamentary procedure. And you know, I'll never forget Mrs. Vixman came to the Irene Kaufman settlement one time. She and Mrs. Raymond Kaufman, if I remember correctly. And they used to see us kids, you know, in our club work. They came sort of to observe. And Mrs. Vixman told me many years later when her family lives here in Pittsburgh, by the way, said to me, "Someday you're going to be a president, too." She was then the president of Hadassah.
So you became the president even over everybody's reluctance.
Yes.
And how long were you president?
I was president for 3 years. And after having been the president for two, you see, when we came back from our honeymoon, we had to get acclimated again. Maury had to adjust his office and the conditions of the bank crash was just being, the country was just getting over its terrible problems. And the times are still very bad, and we didn't want to have any children at that time.
And then what was the date of your wedding?
December 4, 1932. So that 1 year we spent in becoming acclimated again and adjusted to the circumstances, and then I became president of Hadassah. Well, after the second year, we wanted to have children, and Hadassah wanted me to be president for a third year, and I didn't want to take it. And Mrs. Benny Neiman, did you know Mrs. Benny Neiman? Neiman Department Store.
You're right, I've heard the name.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mrs. Benny Neiman was one of the most remarkable people I've ever met.
All
of these women that I mentioned, N-E-I-M-A-N. These were women who really were my...
Mrs. Benny Neiman.
Oh. Well, I didn't want to take the presidency again because I wanted to start having a family. So Mrs. Benny Neiman and Mrs. Julius Cohen and Mrs. I.H. Levin went to see my husband, which is done today, too. And he said, "I don't care if Myrtle takes the presidency, but I guarantee you you'll have a pregnant president." And in my third year of presidency, I became president. I became pregnant. So that I actually, Estelle was born about, 5 years after we were married. And then we had five children in 8 years.
5 years after marriage, so that was what year? That's 37.
Estelle was 37 now, so that's...
She was born 1937, or 38.
So that's Estelle.
What was her birth date? Remember that?
May 11th.
38, you think?
And that's Mrs... What's her name? Amos. No.
No, Sholem.
Sholem.
S-H-O-L-O-M.
And who, name your other children?
And then after Estella, Susan.
And what date was she born?
Her birthday is December 20th, and Susan will be 35 in December.
So that's 41.
Is that what it is?
No, 40. 40 in December. Yes.
And then came Frank, and his birthday is July. July the 26th, I think.
And when was he born?
He was born he's 2 years younger.
42.
Frank is, Susan's 35, will be 35, he'll be 32.
All right.
He'll be 33.
He'll be 33.
35, they're 2 years apart.
In July, he'll be 33, so he was born in 40. No, he was same as my daughter, that's 43. And she'll be 30, my daughter will be 33 in 76, so he'll be 33 in 76. Right. And then the next one?
Then there's Gordon. And he was born Gordon's birthday is April 26th, and Frank's must be July the,
Doesn't matter. Gordon was born in what year?
Gordon is 30, will be 31 in April.
He's 30.
No, he was born in 45. He was born in 45. And that's the 35, that's right.
And Grace
is June the 12th.
We have a June 12th also.
She'll be 30.
She'll be 30 in next June, which is 46.
They're 14 months apart.
That's 46.
All right, now Estelle is married. Any of the others?
Frank's married.
Right. Who is he married to?
He's married to Lynn Kaplan.
K or C?
C, C-A-P-L-A-N.
They live in Pittsburgh?
Uh-huh.
Do they have children?
Two boys. She's very active in council.
That's Ross's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I know them.
Estelle has how many children?
Two.
Two.
Mm-hmm.
Girl, boys?
Girl and a boy. Frank has two boys.
Right. How old are their children?
Laura's nine and...
Who is that? Which one are you telling?
That's Estelle's. Laura's nine and Joseph is seven. And Frank is Reed and he is seven. And Todd is five.
Tell us about their education.
Well, Estelle is a graduate of Vassar. Susan is a graduate of the University of Michigan. And Gordon is a graduate of the University of North Carolina and Pitt Law School.
Well, you've got to say Estelle Pitt Law School.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Can't leave her out.
And Grace is a graduate of Penn State, and Frank of Pitt. Interesting enough, Pitt didn't graduate school. He went to...
Who did Frank?
Frank. He went to Pitt, and he was in business administration, and he worked, let's see how that happened. He was going to night school taking a business administration course, and one of the executives of Coffin's department store was teaching the course. And he was so impressed with Frank's ability, they invited him to come and work for them, but be the buyer, had never been buying before in his life, be the buyer of suits and coats in Coffin's department store. And this was while he was at Pitt. And Coffin's was paying, he wanted to continue at school. And Coffin's was paying for his education at Pitt to go to night school.
Was that the retail training course in a way?
Mm-hmm.
He finished though at Pitt.
No, he didn't. Then he became the buyer and he just continued. He was going to night school with Pitt and continuing, hoping to graduate, and Coffin's was even paying for his son
because
they
wanted
him to work.
But he quit anyway.
Because it required his going out of town so much, he couldn't continue with night school.
Do they all live in Pittsburgh?
Susan and Grace are both in New York. Susan was working for the Ford Foundation for 4 years in Nairobi, in Africa.
Is she in New York now?
She came back September 10th and is finishing her fourth year with the Ford Foundation for February 15th.
And Grace does what?
Grace is the assistant to the head of the Neighborhood Services of New York City. our kids have all been very fortunate in their experiences.
But Frank lives here, and Estelle lives here, and
Gordon does too. Gordon is an attorney.
Where is, who's he?
Kaufman and Harris.
And so is Sholem. He was.
Well, Sholem just got out, as a matter of fact, about a month ago. So Sholem is my son-in-law. Mm-hmm. And Frank is the, works for Action Industries. He's in the sales department of Action Industries. He quit coughing because this was better off. Mm-hmm.
All right, now, as your children were growing up, I'm sure you were busy with them, but I know you were busy with other things.
Well,
after you were president of Hadassah for 3 years, what, and then you were having children, what, did you do anything else in organizations for a while?
There was never a day in my life when I wasn't busy with organizations.
Well, any other high positions?
I was president of the Pittsburgh Conference of Jewish Women's Organizations.
When?
Oh, I don't remember the years.
I mean, when the children were held.
Oh. My children were always very young. I was active throughout.
All right, how did you do it, Merle, with five children and a little...
I want to tell you this. It's really interesting that having had five children at 5 and 8 years was really a rarity. we were blessed with good health, and that's why I was able to do it. And in time, I had 2 and 3 sitters a week. I had regular sitters here all the time. I couldn't have done it if my children hadn't been well, and my husband and I too. So that I can attribute the fact that I was active, and I love people, mm-hmm. and I like working with people, and Maury was most cooperative, and thank God we were financially able to do it, because I don't have to tell you then as now, it takes money to do all of these things. And I enjoyed doing it, and I had, because of the experience that I had with my travels and the need for helping people and having brought up to help people, I felt somebody had to do these things, and I wanted to be among those who were doing it. So that I've always gotten a great deal of satisfaction out of doing these things. And you know, my children, I was looking through these things, and I just, that I don't want to be boastful, but my children never sent us cards on any of our anniversaries or birthdays. They always wrote poems, and it was, I saved many of these things, and they speak glowingly of all the things that we did as parents for them. I'm not exaggerating when I tell you that I think it was more a guilt conscience than anything else, that I never missed a PTA meeting. There wasn't a concert or a lecture or a play that I personally didn't take my five children. To this very day, people say to me, I remember you with the seven of you at concerts and at operas. We always bought 7 tickets for every symphony concert, every opera. There wasn't a children's play that I didn't take the children to. As a matter of fact, and I'll never forget when Eleanor Roosevelt was in town, and it was supposed to, and I wanted the children to see Eleanor Roosevelt because I thought maybe Mrs. Roosevelt would get back here. And I wanted them to see him, and the 7 of us, and I think the youngest was something like 5 or 6 years old, and here we were with little tots walking into the Carnegie Music Hall just so that they could see Mrs. Roosevelt. Things like that. And I attribute it to the fact that I think I had a guilt conscience of spending so much time in organization work, and that I wanted them to have every opportunity of seeing these things and doing these things. And every one of our children, by the way, appreciate music. From the age of 6, we took the children to concerts. Now, they went reluctant. They didn't want to go to the concerts and the operas. They went because they wanted, during intermission, to go to the candy machines and get the candy out of the machines, and then we always took them for a treat afterwards. But it paid off, because while they're not musically inclined, not one of them, they can't carry a tune or play an instrument. They, to this day, they go everything that's worthwhile in the community.
Where did you live when you were raising the children?
Right here. We've been living here since Frank was 13 months, 18 months old. So that if Frank is 32, we've been here about 31 years in this house. They went, every one of them graduated Lindley School, and all of them graduated Taylor Allardyce. They all went to Hebrew school. They graduated Hebrew school. And Stella and Susan graduated the teacher's school at Hebrew Institute.
Where they go to Hebrew school? Hebrew Institute?
Hebrew Institute. Susan taught Sunday school.
Right. They went to Linden School, Hebrew Institute, and then what high school?
Allardyce. Graduated Allardyce. Susan and Stella graduated with high honor. They graduated the Hebrew Institute. They graduated the College of Jewish Studies.
Susan and Estelle.
Susan and Estelle graduated the Hebrew.